Welcome to the Not Just a Pony Ride podcast, presented to you by Hetra University. If you've landed here, you're probably passionate about how horses help people. This podcast is for anyone who helps others experience the benefits of horses or those who have experienced it themselves. If you're in the equine assisted services industry, we're here to help you. If you're here just to learn more, you're in the right place. Welcome to your community of like-minded people, where you will hear stories, education, science, and explanations about how what we do is so much more than just a pony ride. And now, from the Hetra campus in Gretna, Nebraska, here's your host, occupational therapist and CTRI, Katie Ott.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. Today I have Dr. Michelle Piquel on, and she is the creator and founder of Horse Powered Reading. So if you have been on social media at all in any equine groups, I'm sure you've seen the power of this program. With the help of the other trained facilitators, her program is helping so many children learn how to read and really enjoy reading with this hands-on experiential learning process. So Dr. Michelle is here today to tell us about how the program works, including insight about specific activities that they use and really how this experiential learning is helping children. So stay tuned for that. But first, I have some really exciting news. So Not Just a Pony Ride is starting a Patreon. If you are not familiar with what Patreon is, it is a subscription service that offers exclusive perks to podcast listeners and other people that are a fan of kind of our Not Just a Pony Ride brand. So on that Patreon, we are going to have learning, more educational opportunities. We're going to have some administrative things. So maybe sharing some training documents, sharing lesson plans, exclusive access to webinars. And then my favorite thing that the Not Just a Pony Ride Patreon is going to host is our Ask Us Anything call. So on the first Thursday of every month, our CEO, Edie Godden, and COO, Aaron, and any other Hetra staff that we really feel is appropriate is going to host a lunch hour Ask Us Anything. So we had our first one last month and it was awesome. We had a group of people that were really plugged in and really excited to share their perspectives. We had somebody from, I think, 6 or 7 different states on that call, which I think is so cool that we're getting plugged in virtually on this call and helping each other, because at the end of the day, we're not on an island, right? We're all trying to do the same thing and help each other, and it's a really beautiful thing. So that is going to be part of the Patreon subscription service, access to that call, as well as all the other awesome benefits that will be associated with it. So I'm going to put our Patreon link in the show notes below, or head over to the Not Just a Pony Ride Facebook page and I will link it there as well. All right, enough yammering. Let's get to Dr. Michelle Piquel and Horse Powered Reading. Enjoy. Welcome to the show, Dr. Michelle Piquel. I am thrilled to share you with our audience today to talk about horse-powered reading. So why don't you first introduce yourself?
Well, thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be able to share horse-powered reading with your audience. And I have been teaching at Concordia University for the past 25 years, but prior to that, I was in a kindergarten classroom for a few years, and preschool, early childhood was my first love, but now I teach big kids. But then as I started working in classrooms with my student teachers, they would come back to me and tell me about this child or that child that was really struggling with reading. And I'd say to them, we know how to fix this. We know what to do for this. Why aren't the teachers doing it? And I'd share it with my student teacher, and they'd go back and the teacher would love them for helping that child. And I saw more and more, especially after the pandemic, of students who just didn't learn by sitting and listening. They needed that active, engaged, experiential learning. And in 2012, I was teaching a graduate class in teaching of literacy, elementary literacy, and I had been thinking about how the metaphors in the arena that I saw so often with the horses fit in the whole journey of learning how to read and academics. And I would use those metaphors again and again, especially after I had EGALA training. And my EGALA training taught me about metaphors. And once you learn about them, you can't unsee them. They're everywhere. And I was telling this group, you know, I think this could help kids. I think I could use this to help struggling readers, but I really need a couple of kids to practice on and try it out. And one teacher shot her hand up and said, I have just the kid. I just can't figure him out. It's been since the beginning of the school year. It's February now, and I'm just don't know why he's having so much problem. So he was my first volunteer with a neighbor, third grade neighbor down the road from him, and they came out. After our first session, I contacted the teacher and said, this is what I'm seeing from his interaction with the horses. And the first activity is always to choose a connector, which is a lead rope, and go out into my library and choose a book, which is the horse, and preview the book, and then bring it back and summarize it for me. He chose the longest rope I had. It was a Pirelli rope. And so those fasteners are so challenging if you've never seen him before. And he convinced us to let his sister come out and help him. And then he proceeded to hold the very end of the rope. And as he brings it back to me, he's just looking pathetic, right? And when I went back to the teacher and told her what I was seeing, how he was so sweet and getting other people to do his work for him, and he wanted to be as far away from the books as possible and several other things in his academic x-ray that the horses become. And she paused for a minute and finally said, in 1 hour, you figured out what took me from September to February to figure out with this child. It was absolutely profound. And then as the sessions went on, the things that we discovered were just so amazing. And that was the beginning in 2012 of horse-powered reading. It didn't even have a name at that point. And so then I went on and did a summer experiment, got a tiny grant so I could pay a second person to co-facilitate with me, a mental health professional. And it was amazing. Every time the kids went out with the horses. And it's a matter of simply using games and activities that work with particular reading skills. We put those into the arena. We may pre-teach just a little bit before they go out. But then the horses, we've put out the reading skill. The horses then provide motivation and self-efficacy, because the kid says, I can do this. I really can do this. Mm-hmm. And persistence through challenges. And then when you put all those pieces together, it provides an exponential growth that I don't very often see in the field of education. It provides that opportunity for kids who need to explore and need to move, and even neurotypical kids, because it's fun. Mm-hmm. So when did school have to stop being fun is what I want to know. So that now I have this little farm, and I worked with kids here. My 7.5 acres is all with three. I have four horses and a pony, but one of them thinks kids are meant to chase, so he doesn't play with us. But now we have trained over 500 horsepower reading facilitators. So we actually over 536 who are spread across every state in the U.S. and 18 other countries. And one of my biggest thrills is watching horsepower reading unfold in another language and realizing that literacy instruction and reading is a challenge, not just in the U.S., but every country seems to find some of the same challenges. And the one thing that's different is the phonics, but in each different country, they simply overlay their own phonics generalizations or rules, because they all, even languages like Arabic and Japanese, have some phonics and the horses provide all the rest. The fluency, the comprehension, the vocabulary, it crosses borders. Mm-hmm. So that's a little background.
Yeah, fantastic. Wow, I have so many questions. Okay, let's start with, so you mentioned you were EGALA trained. So were you doing some equine assisted, you know, therapy or equine assisted learning type things before horse powered reading was born?
Yes, yes. In fact, that really was the soil that it grew in. Mm-hmm. When I did the EGALA training in 2007 was when I was first trained. And I went to a couple Pirelli trainings, mm-hmm. and the synergy of that just all came together. But the EGALA model really was the soil that it's grown out of. And it's still the gold standard, mm-hmm. having a mental health professional with an equine specialist and allowing the client to discover the answers. And even with reading, I may give a little bit of instruction at the beginning, but we set it up for them to discover that phonics generalization and make it their own. Mm-hmm. And we allow for productive struggle, and we step back and let them do the work of learning.
Yeah. So then when you talk about your horse-powered reading facilitators, then who are the professionals that are involved in a session? Then do you still have a mental health professional couple that facilitator, or what does that look like?
Not always, because we have people from every different, if you will, denomination of equine assisted learning and mm-hmm. therapy that bring horse-powered reading in and overlay it onto their program. With people in the PATH program, the HERD program, and a wide variety of others. And some people who are teachers who are maybe retired and who are also seeing the same frustrations that we see. And they come into it, and we always encourage people, especially if you're working with more than one child or more than one horse, to have another set of eyes mm-hmm. in there with you. And ideally, you will have a education person along with an equine specialist. If you know your client is neurodiverse and has specific mental health issues, a mental health professional is always excellent. So we recommend a second person, but in tutoring sessions, they don't always have that second person. We have one person who does something she calls tutoring with a twist.
So then you mentioned teachers. You have, and I think in a previous conversation we had, that instructors, like therapeutic writing instructors, have gone through the facilitator program. What other types of professions are facilitators?
We have mental health professionals. We have OTs. We have speech therapists. Mm-hmm. Anybody who works with equine assisted learning or therapy and works with children. Mm-hmm. Okay. This is a great additional tool to add to your toolbox.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about the facilitator training and kind of what you get through that process. Because I know that teaching a child to read, like as an occupational therapist myself, teaching a child to read or to start trying to find where those hangups might be for those kids would be a challenge for me. So tell me a little bit about the facilitator learning or training rather.
Well, our facilitator training is a series of four classes. It's once per week for 4 weeks for 2.5 hours. It goes between 2 to 2.5 hours, depending on how many people are in the class. But we generally have around 8 people per class is kind of our optimal number. The first class, you learn about reading and how that fits into the equine activities. How does a horse come together to support and build on that reading? And because so often there's junk that's getting in the way of their reading. Perhaps they've had a trauma or drama during a critical period when they were supposed to be learning basic skills. These are things that we're able to go back into. So we talk a lot about how reading works and some foundational reading skills. We go over a little bit of all of those that first week. So if the person is a teacher, they're putting all those pieces together and fitting it into what they already know. If they are involved in equine assisted learning or therapy in another way, they begin fitting it into that and meanwhile picking up the reading pieces. But the exciting thing, it only takes a very few key skills. So we have what I call the mighty mini must-do list, the key skills that are going to have the biggest impact in the shortest time that anybody can do. I created that list, and I created something called the Bridge to Reading that explains what the different skills are and what that means. I built that so it was for people who had no teaching background. So in essence, in a very short period of time, you're getting a thumbnail sketch or an outline of what my college students who are preparing to be teachers and teach reading in elementary school, what they get. In fact, one of the recommended reading is that book. So the first time is about reading. The second class builds on those other three parts of the success formula, the motivation, the self-efficacy, and the persistence through challenges. And we talk about the foundation of that, the research foundation behind those things and how the horses bring those pieces. So we only bring the reading part. The horses bring the rest of that formula to create that exponential growth. So that's the second class. By the third class, everybody in the group has chosen a volunteer client to work with, and they actually do one of the activities that are in the curriculum, because I've created a complete curriculum with all the resources they're going to need. It's even scripted if they feel like they need it. They do one of those activities with their volunteer client, take some photos, and fill out a session journal so they don't forget what happened. They bring it to class, and each person in that class shares what they did and how they did it. And we debrief, we ask questions, we talk about it, we give suggestions. And then for the fourth week, they do the same thing. And by the fourth week, I go away from that class, and I can't wipe the grin off my face because of the profound insights that the facilitators have had, the difference they've made in those students. If they never do another horsepower reading activity in their life, I am confident that all 536 people who've been trained have impacted at least one or more students during the training piece. But most of them take that curriculum, which I refer to as a package of seeds. They take that curriculum and they plant it in their community, in the culture, in the soil of their community, and tweak it and adapt it and adjust it to meet the needs of the people that need them. So yeah. 4 weeks, you got it. And then we provide support afterwards by way of workshops and myself, my other two instructors, and the gal who wrote our horsepowered math curriculum that built on the activities from horsepowered reading, Nancy, those people do workshops, and all four of us in the leadership team are available to talk, to brainstorm when somebody needs us.
Wonderful. So after someone, a facilitator is trained in the program, then they, you know, take all these, you know, seeds, as you say, home to their communities, and they're going to start a program. So tell me a little bit about what it looks like recruiting participants for that program. Do they work? Obviously, I'm assuming they work closely maybe with schools or teachers in their area if they're not already an educator.
We always tell people that you start where you are, you use what you have, and you do what you can. Nancy Lyon, We stole that from her, and I think she got that from Teddy Roosevelt. When I went through the Teddy Roosevelt Museum, he had something very similar to that, that a quote that he said. But starting where they are and where's the need that you're closest to. We've got homeschoolers. There are people, most of the people who take the class come to it with a need in mind, whether it's their own child. Some people take the class strictly to help their own child who they're homeschooling. Mm-hmm. Some people are doing, one gal in New Hampshire was able to take advantage of a grant from Prenda, it's called, and created an actual school, kind of an open school at her home. It's like a daycare, but it's a school, and she's mm-hmm. using horse-powered reading as part of that. Other people are connecting with schools, are getting grants. One of our instructors, Ruth, is doing, they lost their farm, the lease on the farm where they were at shortly after she did horsepower reading. So they had to figure out, now what do we do? Where do we take our horses and where do we do our practice? And so they created something they called Ponies in the Park, where they actually go to public spaces and do learning activities, horsepower reading activities. They take two ponies and a horse or two horses and a pony. They go to schools, libraries, respite centers where kids who go while their parents have a break. Amazing things. In one summer, they served 900 kids wow. by doing that. And she taught a class that's called Funding and Forms to help people organize their group. We've had another one that we really love called Traveling Tales, like T-A-I-L-S, mm-hmm. how she does that. We've got people doing so many different things in so many different places. We become their cheerleader, that we've got research behind what we're doing mm-hmm. so they can take the data and the research. We have created a facilitator portal that's a private website just for our horsepower reading people that has marketing resources and articles to work with different kids with different kinds of disabilities, and a catalog of the different workshops that they can participate in if they've been trained. So one, the most recent one that was fabulous is called Sustainability and Growth Mindset, that Nancy and Ruth, two of our leaders, did, that is just phenomenal, that talks about a lot like one of your recent programs on the financial end of it, the business yeah. end of running the equine business. Mm-hmm. And they provided materials as an outcome of that, a budgeting, how to figure out how much to charge in your particular area and such as that.
Yeah. I love how flexible the program is. So you really give people the nuts and bolts to, you know, one, get a program started and keep it sustainable, and then grow and change it and develop it into whatever meets the needs of your community. And I think as long as you have the nuts and bolts from your training, people can really make it what they need it to be, right? This episode is sponsored by Stable Moments. Did you know that there are over 400,000 children in the United States foster care system? Most of these children have complex trauma needs, which makes them ideal candidates for equine-assisted learning programs. If you serve or want to serve children in foster care, Stable Moments has a plug-and-play program model utilizing community mentors and equine-assisted learning to develop life skills and heal developmental trauma. With their online certification program, you can become certified in this model and start serving kids by next season. What's even better is the program can be funded by Department of Children and Families, and the mentors are all volunteers. To learn more, head over to stablemoments.com and check out their free webinar, Healing Trauma with EAL and Mentorship.
I love that metaphor when you describe that. It's sort of like giving somebody an erector set that you can build 50 different machines right. from, and a whole bunch of different, you can invent new things. And the only thing we ask on our horse-powered reading Facebook page, which we invite people to join, we love to have you share what you've done, because one of our favorite activities is the horse labels, and the variety of ways people do this is amazing to see what it looks like. One person calls it living diagrams, because she said third and fourth graders have a terrible time figuring out what diagrams are in their textbooks, like social studies and science. So a living diagram, I love using the horse labeling to build their understanding of homonyms, multiple meaning words, like tail and tale, mm-hmm. a tale of two cities and a tail on a horse, and the main street and the mane on the horse. And so many parts of the horse have multiple meanings. And so we play with that. We build writing activities from it. You can take it 20 different ways. And watching our facilitator in Germany do this, where she works with visually impaired kids. Mm. She worked with a little girl, third grade, who was blind from birth. She translated the words into German, made them on Braille cards. The little girl picked the card out, read the part of the horse, and then had to find it on the pony.
Oh.
It was incredible. So the things I've seen just make me glow.
I love that. So tell me a little bit about why the horse, I guess. So there's a lot of different programs that utilize different things for reading and education. And obviously you got your start in the EGALA model. So you were already, you know, horse savvy. But what makes it different than using like a dog or using, you know, other like tactile things in reading?
We don't discourage people from using other creatures, other animals, because everything in your environment is going to impact. In fact, the way the curriculum is written, I wrote it for a special ed summer school program that ran 4 days. So they did 1 day in the arena, 1 day in the classroom, 1 day in the arena, 1 day in the classroom. So we had two activities, arena activities with the horses, and then followed it up with classroom activities that parallel, that work on the same skills that build on what they did in the arena. So that's in the curriculum. So they have for decoding, for fluency, for vocabulary, and for comprehension. It was over 4 weeks. They did one skill per week for 4 weeks. So, for example, our gal in Iceland that took the course recently, did you know that you cannot import any other breed of horse into Iceland? Only Icelandic horses are in Iceland, which I was amazed. Well, she happened to live on this big island off the coast of Iceland. And in the winter, they ship all of their horses to the main island so that there's more feed available, et cetera. And she's a teacher and works with kids that struggle. So she did the classroom activities. She created somebody made little wooden horses and the kids named them. And they're doing the activities that they would do with horses, with their little toy horses. Mm-hmm. And then she said they can't wait till the horses come back and they can do those same activities with the real horses. So this is designed for teachers to build experiential reading activities as well as working with the horse. It's a kind of a crossover, if you will.
Have you done, you mentioned that there was some research done on horse-powered reading. What type of research was it? I guess I would be curious to see if, like you're mentioning, the teacher in Iceland, if she sees better results, you know, using the live horse versus doing just classroom activities, or what kind of results you get.
That is a great idea. I'm like, oh yes, I'm going to contact her and tell her to keep better records so we can explore that. And that is phenomenal. Let's say if I were to put it on a gradient, I would say regular classroom, experiential reading in a classroom and in the playground area, and then horse-powered reading with the horses in the arena is the most powerful, because to remember things, the powerful events is what your amygdala, it's like putting a sticky note on your amygdala telling it, remember this. So it's so powerful. And what we've done as far as research, that very first summer in 2012, I did this over, I recruited 10 students, 8 weeks. I always get the numbers backed. did pre I because of my background, I have access to a lot of assessment tools. So we did pre-assessment and post-assessment. I saw amazing growth just during those 8 sessions that the kids did. But I know from my doctoral research that it takes at least 50 hours of tutoring, intensive tutoring with a qualified instructor, to make a statistically significant difference in most cases. So I was concerned because I saw it, but I couldn't measure it because it was a incremental growth at that point. However, since I had been accepted to do a presentation at the next EGALA workshop, I thought, oh crud, now what? What am I gonna say? Well, about 6 months later, shortly before we did the presentation, I decided, well, I'm gonna call the parents and see what's going on with their kids. Every single parent that I contacted shared exponential growth in their students. And one parent who wasn't as involved as I would like the parents to be, they sent them with a nanny. Anyway, that person said, well, that's the only thing that was different. And yeah, it's just going crazy, doing great. Because just like an EGALA model, we talk a lot about the latency effect, kind of like you do the activity and then it soaks
right
for a day or for a week, and you have these insights that come. Well, when you've done this these activities with the children and then they get back to school, all of a sudden they're excited about reading because they've had fun with it. They now believe that they can do it because the horses showed that they were capable and that they could do it, and they refreshed or renewed learning about some of those basic skills, and they now are more confident to persist through challenges. We do a lot with productive struggle mm-hmm. in horse-powered reading. We talk a lot about allowing them to wrestle with the problem. So with those three pieces now in their pocket, they go back to school, all of a sudden it's a whole different ball game, and the teacher sees them differently, and it begins to snowball. And that's where within 4 to 6 months afterwards, we've just seen amazing changes in kids. And the next research project we did this first one. Then we did the next project with the summer school in Warland, Wyoming. But this time we intentionally prepared to do focus groups 4.5 months after the sessions were finished in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, every parent, every child that came in, it was kind of funny because as we were doing the focus group, after the first couple of parents started talking, I could feel myself going, oh, I didn't realize I'd been holding my breath for 4.5 months and thinking, oh, what if? Because this was out in the middle of Wyoming. Well, then we worked for 3 years. I worked with a school in northern Alberta, Canada, a small school and a native with about 70% Native kids, First Nation kids, and trained, I think, 4 of the teachers. We had at least 4, and they started work with a second grade class. They happened to have an arena connected with the school that had been donated, and so they went weekly, and they did also the arena activities and the classroom activities. And in fact, remember I told you about that first activity where you take the rope and you go take the connector out and connect? The person doing this with probably 13 or 14 kids in a group working with the children, she would, when she wanted to talk to all these second graders together, she would have them disconnect from their reading buddy and hand her the buckles. She would hold the buckles and each kid held the end of the rope. And if they started goofing around and wiggling, she'd just take a step backwards and they'd catch their attention. Then she'd take a step backwards. Mm-hmm. The classroom teacher actually took a lead rope into the classroom for their circle time. And she held the buckle and the kids would hold the end of the rope when mm-hmm. they wanted to talk. Anyway, we did this with different age groups in the spring, in the summer, in the spring, in the fall, and for 3 years, over a period of 3 years. And oh my goodness. I did not get to visit. Mm-hmm. I only got to visit on the computer. They carried me around in the arena so I could talk to the kids. And they would take videos and send me videos, audio transcripts of the teachers talking. I had those transcribed. Amazing. And we have that summarized for our facilitators to use when they apply for grants as well. So it's pretty exciting. And I retire from Concordia University in June. And one of my goals is to have an app on the phone to make it easier to collect data from our facilitators around the globe to get a bigger N, because that's one of the biggest challenges with research in this field, is getting a big enough number of participants.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my dream.
Fabulous. Would you take me through maybe what a session looks like? Maybe if you're targeting, maybe it's a one-on-one with a participant, and maybe what the skill is that you're targeting and kind of what activity you pair with that to help.
Well, we have so many different fun games. Trying to decide which one. When we're working on, one of my favorite ones is probably when we work with phonograms, where these are the word families, like in cat, you got at, bat, sat, fat, cat. They all have the AT, that's the phonogram. And so we do word herds where the kids each build a ranch. And when they did this in Canada, the Canadian Research Project, it was just hilarious. The teacher said, April said, they had such extravagant ranches. They'd work in teams. They'd build their ranch, and each of the individuals had a pen, and they would get their brand, which was one of those phonograms, AT or IKE or ACK, any of those word family. There's 37 phonograms that will make over 500 words. So if the kids recognize those, it gives them a huge boost. Yeah. So anyway, they'll play with that. And each one creates a pasture for the cattle in their brand. And having been on an actual roundup in South Dakota, I always get mixed up which one we were at. We were on these thousands of acres where they had to gather. I helped. I was riding my horse. Gather all the cattle to a central location, and then they had to sort them according to the brand that goes to their ranch. So when we do this game, we've got all different objects and different word balls, as we call them, big and little. We call them, these are the bulls and these are the cows and these are the calves. And, you know, we do vocabulary as we're going along too. So they have to go out into the pasture and collect their herd. And they've got their particular phonogram that they're working with. Another variation of that is for one individual, where they have this herd and they have to sort the herd into different pens. They have to sort them into the word family. So it's basically taking research-based reading strategies and making a game out of it. They call it word sort in a classroom, mm-hmm. and it's incredibly powerful and beneficial. We play a game when you add a magic E to one of those consonant vowel consonant words. We'll put the short vowel like hop on one side of a cone and then turn the horse into a magic E. They read the short vowel word first time going around, serpentining around a course, mm-hmm. or around the outside of the arena, and then they decorate the horse with magic E's. And they go along, and if you add the magic E to the end of that word, boom, it turns the vowel long and makes them say a long vowel. It's fun. People in the PATH program, kids with disabilities, can do this, can make their horse a magic E and go by words that are around the outside of the arena. Mm-hmm. So that's a couple of, so that didn't tell you exactly how to go about it. The curriculum has it step by step, where these are the goals that you're trying to work toward. You give the student an opportunity. If this is their first time with the horse, of course, you wouldn't do this with the first time. You generally do the one I said about, go out and explore the books in my library and choose a book that you like and bring it back to me and tell me a little bit about it. What do you know about this book? What's the history? So they're, it's a get acquainted kind of a time.
Yeah.
But once they're acquainted, then they would choose, always they choose their connector. And by about the third session, I'll have the horses unhaltered, horse or horses unhaltered. And then that part of the connector they have to put on as well, which builds the productive struggle. Mm-hmm. And we'll play with the fact that there's a rope halter and a rather regular halter. They're the same, but they're different.
Mm-hmm.
And in the same way, the word tail can be the same, but different. It sounds the same, but it's different. So it's a segue into also working with another skill.
Mm-hmm.
So that did, that was, gave you three or four activities.
Yes.
They're just like playing games with kids.
That's right.
They're playing games with kids and horses.
Mm-hmm. Who could want to do anything else for their job?
If you're having fun, they're having fun.
That's right. Well, I have loved learning so much about horse-powered reading. I think that the program is wonderful, and it has the ability to fit so well into so many centers and programs that are out there already, or someone that wants to start. So how do people get a hold of you or get more info on horse-powered reading?
All you need to do is go to the horsepoweredreading.com website.
Mm-hmm.
And on there, you can click on the facilitator link, the training link, and go. We currently are signing people up, registering people for March classes. We have three right now scheduled, and there'll be potentially a fourth one added, depending on where we need it. So that's all they need to do. It is so fun, and it is exciting. I told my educational psychology class last night, I said, this is just the best career ever, because you haven't lived until you've seen this aha on a kid's face. One little girl, after we did the Magic E activity, she's the granddaughter of one of the other professors I work with. She was out for the summer programming. And on the way back, she told her Nana that, I never knew about this. My teacher talked about the E after the end of the word, but I didn't know what it was for or what it did. So when it's just in the way they internalize
mm-hmm.
what we're doing, that becomes really exciting. And we love having more people in our HPR. It is a family feeling, because mm-hmm. we share with each other and on the Horsepower Reading Facebook page and in so many ways. If you've got a great idea, it's wonderful to be able to share it with other people.
I love that. A big family.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as we kind of wrap up here, Michelle, I end my podcast with the same question. Every season I have a different one. And this season it is, if you had to give advice to your young professional self, you know, kind of on your journey here, earlier in the journey, what would you look back and tell yourself?
I would say embrace the challenges, because that's where you're going to learn the most and grow the most. When you come up against a wall, I'll never forget when I tried to talk to the academic dean about sharing a class through Concordia, through the university. And he kind of hedged and he wasn't comfortable with it. He says, well, why don't you just do it on your own? I was furious. I was so upset. I thought, what do I do now? Well, if it hadn't been for that, I would have never been able to reach to people across the ocean, all over the globe. The obstacles in your path are really in proportion to the blessings, the outcomes that can come from those obstacles. The mm-hmm. bigger the obstacle, the bigger the miracle is going to have to be
mm-hmm.
to move you to the next step. And I tell people, only God could do something like this. It is so unimaginable from where everything started. But you just take the next logical step in faith, trust the process, and keep moving. So, and I think telling myself that, those are lessons that I learned along the way. Trust the process, keep on moving, have fun, and Don't be so anxious. It's going to be fine whichever way it goes. It's like when you're with the horse doing a equine assisted therapy or learning, wherever the horse takes you is the place you're supposed to go.
That's right. It's all about that productive struggle.
Amen. Amen.
Okay, well, I will share your website and your social in the show notes below. So if you're listening, you can go down and scroll down and click on that. And then, of course, go over to the Not Just a Pony Ride Facebook page, and I will share it there as well. Thank you so much for joining me today, Michelle. I appreciate you.
Well, thank you. This is a wonderful way to get information to people to help grow and build their businesses, but also to build other people.
That's right, because that's the business. It's fortunate that the business we're in is helping others. So we kind of helping everyone, hopefully, by this little outlet. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another episode. Until the next one launches, stay connected to our community by joining the Not Just a Pony Ride Facebook group. There we share exclusive educational content, answer your questions, and review new and exciting developments for the EAS community. Don't forget, if you have suggestions for future episode topics or a lead on a great guest that you think our audience would enjoy, click on the link in the show notes or visit us at hetrauniversity.org. This podcast is presented by Hetra University, an educational arm of the Heartland Equine Therapeutic Riding Academy. Hetra University's mission is to provide high-quality educational offerings to our participants and the EAS community. If you'd like to help us work toward our mission, you can make a donation by visiting us online at hetra.org. Again, I can't thank you all enough for helping Hetra change lives one stride at a time.